Welcome to the Seedman Mentorship Podcast. This is your captain speaking. On this show, we navigate the voyage of life through the lens of Lakers, some who have just come aboard and others who are well underway. We will speak with experts who will show us the ropes, help us plot a course, and recount exhilarating tales of uncharted territory, all while promoting lifelong learning agility and a culture of mentorship. Today on the show, I host a roundtable of self-identified introverts and extroverts. Two students and two professionals discuss the ways we approach situations, how we are different and how we are the same. I am fascinated by the social scripts each style uses to achieve the common goal of success in school, business, and life. All right. Thanks, everybody, joining us for the special podcast on introverts and extroverts in business. And I've been thinking about this for a while, and I have our first guest who's going to introduce himself to thank for that, Phil Sims. And Phil and I have kind of, we've been thrust together on two different occasions now, and it came very apparent to me as we were having some conversations that our styles, while we're both successful in business, are very, very different. And I wanted to spend time thinking about that, but because this is a mentorship podcast, it's just not us old professionals talking about it. I want to bring in some students. So I've assembled some folks today who self-identify as these styles. And I want to talk about how we use those styles in our either professional life for the professional side, the academics for the student side, and then recognize how we can put these two groups together and work better together, whether it's professionally or academically in the future. So we'll go around the room and introduce ourselves. I'm the captain of the mentorship, Jerry Cook, and it's my honor and privilege to host the podcast and the mentorship program. I did 30 years in corporate business, in sales and marketing, and a lot of PR work. And then I was kind of forced to transition during the pandemic and came to academia, and I've been enjoying my work here. Phil?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Phil Sims, CEO of Integrity Tree Services. Attended Grand Valley State back 2010 is when I graduated with a degree in accounting before kicking my career off in public accounting. Did that for 6 years and got a career opportunity to rejoin Integrity Tree. We call people who leave and come back boomerang. So I am officially a boomerang with Integrity Tree. Been there for 7 years, five of which in the CEO capacity.
And you self-identify as an introvert.
Yeah, highly functioning introvert.
Got it. And I self-identify as an extrovert. Sophia?
I'm Sophia. I'm a junior at Grand Valley State University right now. I major in marketing and minor in international business. I just finished working at the Seedman Advising Center, and that was fun. But I do identify more as an introvert, not like a super introvert, but like there's ways where I'm extroverted. But I would say definitely I sway more as an introvert.
Great. Elena?
And I'm Elena Borsma. I am going into my junior year at Grand Valley, where I'm majoring in human resource management and minoring in psychology. Currently, I have an internship at Caltech's Textron, or CWC Textron. And yeah, I definitely self-identify as an extrovert, and I'm excited. So,
great. You're energized by a social interaction. This is allegedly, I'm glad you brought up the psychology. We are not psychologists. We're not here to diagnose, treat, or suggest any course of treatment for anything we talk about on today's podcast. We're merely talking about how the styles show up. That was my best impression, Phil, of the commercial at the end of the, you know, the drug commercial. Mm-hmm. So here we go. So let's go around the room and talk about kind of your personality type and how do you think it exemplifies or it personifies introversion, extroversion, and how does it show up professionally or academically? Phil?
Yeah, from a introversion standpoint, I think I find myself very apt to study a room, study the energy of individuals, and make sure that I'm very aware of how I'm being perceived, watching responsiveness very, very closely, and not defaulting to an offensive style of communication. There is a lot of reactionary considerations in the way that I interact with people, and my default and bias is generally going to be to ask questions first and adapt my style based on what those around me determine is the most effective approach. So I would say both in my personal life with friendships, my own wife, and also professionally, it's really important to me to understand how I'm coming off and be as sensitive as I can be based on that.
And I noticed, Phil, in our interactions, one of the first times, I guess we've worked together twice in the past, but this most recent iteration, I think after one of our first initial meetings, you had this recap for me, and I won't forget this, where you said, so what my role is, Jerry, in this is to be a sounding board for you for ideas and to help support you with specific, you know, initiatives. And I liked that wrap, but I thought it was interesting how you defined, you wanted to define what it is that your role was in this personal, this iteration of our relationship. And I wouldn't have thought to do that. Mm-hmm. So I recognized that as, oh, what a reflective trait that you had.
Yeah, I think authority doesn't always mean expertise. And so understanding where you fit is critically important to a healthy team and to healthy relationships in my perspective.
Super.
Yeah.
Sophia?
I would say that my introversion really shows in a school environment, as in more ways of like, I don't look for, or sometimes I look forward to like group projects and stuff, but other times I thoroughly enjoy just sitting in class, not having to, you know, volunteer or speak out or any of that, and just kind of sit there and do my work and focus on myself and not really have to worry about communicating with other people sometimes. And I also definitely, if I am working in group projects or if I'm hanging out with a big group of people, I definitely can get, my social battery can get drained, as people say. Like, I definitely don't, like how you mentioned earlier, how you can get energized by talking to people. Sometimes that really, like, tires me out. And I really sometimes just like working on myself and not having to focus on other people as well.
That classic introversion, extroversion, where the introvert spending energy to be with people and then needs recharge, and the extrovert is gaining energy from interacting with people. So can I ask you what your recharge is? What do you do to recharge?
Pretty much just sitting in a room by myself and like going on my phone for a bit. And then I'll usually, or like watching TV, like one of my favorite shows or something. And then I'm able to like get back out there.
Right. Later on, I'm going to ask everybody if group work is pushed too far in academia and professionally. So think about that. We're going to come back to group work. Elena?
So I definitely am an extrovert, and it shows in my classes and in my jobs. I'm always the girl in class who raises her hand for every question, and I end up looking like a little teacher's pet, but I just enjoy being the person who can answer the question, and if no one else answers, I'm like, okay, well, I might as well, even if it's wrong, I'll at least be confident in it. And I also like will make connections or make relationships out in the hallway. Like if we're waiting for class, I'll be like, oh, like, what are you majoring in? Or like, just ask them what their name is. And cause the better you know people that are in your class, like the more you're able to find study groups, and you're held accountable more, just cause you're like, oh, did you do your homework? And they're gonna be like, oh no, I didn't. But like, if you didn't know them, like you're not gonna care if they know if you did your homework or not. So yeah, that's how it would show up for me. And I always, I'm the one chatting in class, so.
So I think you've stolen some of mine, because I think I'm the same way. But I also think part of my extroversion is actually a vulnerability, almost as a defense. Like, I feel uncomfortable if I haven't established a relationship with another person. So I did sales for many, many years. And in the good old days of sales, and I'm talking way back in the 80s and 90s, we had features and benefits selling. And there's so many books written about sales, but if you've studied any kind of sales training in the past 10 years, this will sound familiar. Features and benefits was, you know, here's a pen. The pen clicks, it opens, it closes, it writes, it does everything. Look at how great this pen is. It's got a clip. It goes in your pocket. That was then. And then we moved on to solution sellings. Oh, I bet you guys didn't. Do you ever have to write something? I bet you do. I bet you have to write. You know what you need? You need a pen. And then you go back to features, benefits, and it clicks and it does all this. And I was shocked. And my last iteration of sales training was called the Challenger Sale. And there's a book about this. It's very popular right now. And the Challenger Sale threw out my favorite part of selling, which was relationship. To me, I always want a relationship before I ask somebody for something. So to me, telemarketers are annoying, not because they call me at dinner time, it's because they launch right into whatever it is they want to do. And my style was, I wanted to get to know somebody. I want to learn about them. I want to know about their hobbies, all things that I think maybe the introverts find like unnecessary and annoying. But then I'm going to hit you up for what it is I need. And that worked for me. And the challenger sale was no. Relationship selling doesn't work. Not only do you need to prove a need, but you need to like make that need right now. Someday soon, you guys are going to need to write something, and it's going to be something very important. You don't know it now, and if you don't have the ability to write, you're going to miss out on whatever it is. And there's a term for this. It's actually called rational drowning. It sounds as terrible as it is. And then you go back and do, and I have the solution. I'm going to save you because I have a pen. And the pen clicks, and it writes, and all those things I said. That extroversion still shows up in me, kind of similar to what Elena said, where I want to know people and I want to spend time with people and get to know them. So the opposite of Sophia. So this week I was very, very busy, very, very tired. And I had a 7 o'clock. We had the mentorship student advisory group where I think maybe for the introverts, that would be the last thing you want to do at the end of a stressful day. I actually gained energy from it. It was fun to see everybody. We all worked together. We parceled out the next thing we're going to do and we're going to move forward on that. And I walked out of that Zoom meeting energized. And I think understanding and recognizing how either your mentorship partner, your business partner, your personal partner, whatever, whoever's in your life, how they operate could be helpful. And I think often my extroversion is often because if people aren't getting along, that makes me uncomfortable. And that's why I'm thinking like, oh, you know, we could just all get along if we just share our hobbies and interests. So that's where I think it comes out on my side. The next question is, where do you feel that your type really works and succeeds? What's the best kind of work environment for you, and what's the opposite of that?
So this may sound a little bit like a dichotomy in light of the introversion, but I really enjoy teamwork, and I really enjoy others, and I find that while it does require energy, I would not choose a career path where I were working by myself in my basement. That would be a special form of torture for me. So it's really about balancing my days, and I don't always have complete control over my days and how the balance works, but what I find is teamwork is very energizing, followed by opportunities to reflect, think, and process. And if I have both of those components and dynamics, I find that I'm fulfilling my highest and best use to the company or to my personal relationships, etc.
Do you schedule that time, Phil?
I do, yeah.
So you'll block out time for your reflection. So is it, do you reflect before a meeting, after, both? How do you work that?
Generally after, and there's a cadence to my week that I've settled into where there are certain blocks of time that are my time. And that's progressed quite a bit more of late for me because I felt guilty. I didn't feel like that was work. And what I am learning as a result of that practice is it keeps me sharp. It keeps me focused. There's discernment's a big part of my job because while it may feel good to take every good idea as you go down the grocery aisle and put it in the shopping cart, you'll run out of space. And so you have to be very thoughtful about your conversations around decisions, around organizational commitments, around capacity, things of that nature. And that does require thinking. It's not just purely reactionary. And so there's both dynamics in the equation for me.
Makes sense. Sophia?
Yeah, I really agree with what Phil said with like the balance, because I don't think I could do all work or projects like by myself, because that would be a lot. But I definitely think that with introversion, like in school stuff, I think I do best in like individual work, you know, when it says like write an essay or something like that, compared to like write a group essay or something like that. You know, I feel a lot better when I can just do it by myself because I'm really good at being able to stay focused. And sometimes I find that working with other people is distracting, and that I can, like, I know I can do a good job by myself. And so, and I know I can get it done, like, during the time period I want to. And so just kind of being able to, like, grind it out and get it done by myself sometimes is a lot. I feel like that's where it succeeds most, even though teamwork is super important in a work and school environment. But I would say, like, if you give me a project, that if I just do it by myself, it'll be done a lot faster and more efficiently.
Okay, I guess I'll go next. So going into HR, that's, I mean, human resources, you're going to have to be working in a team and you kind of have to be a little bit of an extrovert. And I've definitely learned that over the summer in my internship. And it's kind of inevitable to have to work with a bunch of people in other teams. So like different departments and different levels of people. And even in classes, like you have to be extroverted to some extent because you have to talk about group projects because every class always has a group project, no matter what class it is. And building those relationships, not only as an introvert or an extrovert, like are important because it builds the trust and it improves your communication. So even if you just communicate like, okay, like I am not super like good at this and I don't really want to do this part of the project, but I will do this other part. And like someone else can take over and be like, okay, well I am good at that part. Like, and this is what I will do. And like having that communication is like definitely where being an extrovert works the best for me. In other cases where extroversion does not really work for me is you guys have the balance of like, okay, I will take this time to be by myself and think about things and, you know, set it aside. But sometimes I feel like I put myself in a position where I can't say no because I'm already have this relationship and I'm like, yes, I will do that for you. Like, I would love to do that for you. And then I kind of get into a habit of putting too much on my plate and then stressing myself out of like, oh my gosh, I have 12 million things to do today from 7 a.m. till 9 p.m. And I definitely need to get better at balancing, like you guys have mentioned. But I...
having a little mic collapse, it happens. It's screwed in on the bottom.
There we go. But yeah, so that would be my problems in good situations.
Well, I like how you talk about the concessions for that too, because I think we all, nobody's 100% one style or the other, and we make those concessions. I like what you said about the relationship aspect of extroversion, because I definitely feel that too, that, okay, so I built this relationship with you, likely, you know, from a holistically good standpoint. I did my best selling when I was just listening to the client and building that relationship. And then when it made sense for whatever product or service that I had made sense for them, I would tell, hey, Mr. Customer, you know, I've known you for a long time. I know your business. And by the way, this is a solution for you that would work. I think you should consider it. The other path of that, of what Elena just said, is true. I think for the extrovert too, is I've opened myself up. So that customer called and said, hey, Jerry, we have this relationship. And now I need you to jump in the car and go do this thing right now because you're my rep and I'm the customer, right? And that's the, I guess, the other side of that coin is you leave yourself open in those relationships. So did you get that mic back on yet?
It's okay. I'll just hold it. We'll be good.
Our studio here that has, you know, you've heard me say on the show before, it pops up and then it goes away. So nothing's permanent yet. So if anybody wants to, you know, donate a studio that's permanent to Grand Valley State University, boy, I certainly would enjoy it. So throwing that out there. That's extroversion asking for random things, isn't it? Was that an extroversion thing I just did? Let's jump into some practicums and talk about like real situations. So if it's the, and Phil, I want you to go back in time to your school days. Actually, let's let the students go first on this one and then we'll go. So we'll go back around the table the other way. If it's the first week of class, what do you do? And I think we're going to find a difference between what the extroverts and introverts would do. Elena?
So during the first week of class, I will walk into a class and, you know, like you'll sit down. And I hate sitting in the back of the class. I always sit either like right in front or at least like in the middle. And then usually, you know, someone will sit next to you. Or like if someone doesn't sit next to me, I'll scooch over and sit next to them and be like, hi, like I'm Elena. Like I kind of feel like Dory sometimes. I'm like, hi, like, yeah, this is me. But then like I'll like introduce myself and I'll like make for some friends in class. And, like we'll make like a group chat usually and we'll have that to like ask about homework and stuff. But then with my professors, I'll stay after class and I'll introduce myself and I'll be like, hi, like I'm Elena. This is what I'm doing. Like, I'm excited for your class. And then I always end up going to their office hours too, because they're so beneficial and they'll always give you like little hints on your exams as well. But so that's like me in class. And then like an example from this summer, I had my first internship. And my first day, my boss was kind of like, okay, like as the HR intern, like, you know, you're kind of going to have to facilitate like intern activities. And I was like, oh, well, good thing, because I like to do that stuff. So our first week, the first day that the rest of the interns got there, I was like, oh, this is where I eat lunch, guys. So you should all sit with me. And then we sat there every single day this summer. And like all of the managers would walk by and be like, you guys are the first group of interns to ever eat lunch together every day. And I was like, I love that. And so I was super happy that we did that. And then we also, we planned some like after work activities, and they're like, it was nice to get to know everyone and, just like get that summer started with them. And same with classes. It's good to get, relationships built right then in the first week. So then you can enjoy the rest of the semester, the rest of the summer, and have those. Yeah.
Good. So far I'm batting 1,000 of the way I think this is going to go. Sophia.
So kind of like Elena, I do, during the first week of classes, I do like to sit in the front. I don't like to sit in the back. I typically do actually try to sit by people, because I don't just like sitting and then there's like a huge space between me and other people. But it really depends on the class for me if I introduce myself to others. Like if it's a bigger class where it's most likely that everybody just kind of sits there and is quiet, I typically don't talk to anybody. But if it's a smaller class, then I definitely will like introduce myself and say like, I'm Sophia, and then, kind of get a conversation with them, because I feel like the smaller classes always are more likely to also have like group projects and stuff like that. So it's easy to find people sooner than later. Once the class is over, I've never talked to the professor before or gone to office hours or anything like that. Once the class is done, I'm out of there.
And this is the question that first kicked off Phil and I talking about introversion, extroversion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So as a student, I was, with any new classroom setting, I would definitely read the room. And I am not the type to enjoy sitting way in the back, because I was sincerely engaged in wanting to be able to learn and appear accordingly. I also find that I didn't sit by myself or have space between. I would just, sit next to whoever that was kind of in the zone where I felt comfortable. And I would get to know whoever that was throughout the course of the semester. My mindset at the time was, it took me quite a while to figure out what I wanted to do when I grew up. So by the time I was at Grand Valley, I was already married, and basically Grand Valley was a job to get to the other side of what I really wanted to do. And so I had a different mindset back when I was attending college than I would have had today. And what I would have done differently today is a lot more engagement with professors, and I would have invested a lot more energy into building relationships with those that were in the core classes related to my career path. Maybe not every class, but I've met so many amazing Grand Valley students that I either was in class with or missed by a year or two, that are just doing some super cool things in their career. And I would have been able to keep up with that journey along the way had I established those relationships at Grand Valley. And I feel to a degree like I'm playing catch up now as I'm meeting more people. And obviously the CPA route, if you're on the assurance side of the practice, you are signing up to travel to work on teams in rooms like this, where you're in a room for 12, 14, 16 hours a day together. And it taught me, being forced to do that taught me things about myself that I had made assumptions on that were wrong. And there are elements of, that's why I say highly functioning introvert, is there are elements where I do get energy from others, and some things that, frankly, if I had it to do over again, I would have had a very different mentality and mindset towards my time at Grand Valley.
It's interesting to hear the different styles. And this was the question that really started me thinking, because I had said to Phil, when I had a mentee, I would always tell my mentee, number one, week one, go get a business card that says you're a student at Grand Valley and has your name on it. And I would tell my mentees, I was completely oblivious to whether they were introverts, extroverts, this was the way to do it. And I would have my mentees, and they were famous for it, after class, not only go up and do that introduction, but hand that professor their business card. I'm like, and now we're going to follow up in office hours. And I would ask my mentee, who's your favorite professor this semester? I want to take them to lunch. And we'd go out and have that business lunch and start fostering that connection to the next connection, to the next connection, which was very heavy-handed of me. And I'm not advising that you do that. I'm advising having a conversation to figure out where your mentees is at and figure that out. But Yes, absolutely. What Elaine had said that to do that, but completely understanding. And when I asked Phil that question the first time, he said to me, why would I do that? That's a waste of the professor's time. I wouldn't go to their office hours unless I had something I generally needed. And I hadn't thought about it that way because, again, I want to build that relationship or get that hint that I think, Elaine, I think sometimes the extroversion thing is we're building this relationship, and I think sometimes as an extrovert, I push that onto other people, and then they just feel obligated. And I never realized until much later in my career how that's, like, annoying to a lot of people because you're almost forcing this obligation upon them that they're not necessarily accepting. And so that came later on. I do want to represent the people in the back of the room. I sat in the back of the room, especially in undergrad, but no, graduate school, I sat in the back too. But I liked to see the other people, and I didn't like people behind me or talking about me. So maybe that's some other maybe that's some other part that probably doesn't show up in extroversion. But I like to see the people, especially in those theater style classrooms. I like to kind of sit in the back and see people and kind of read that room of interacting. I also found that in those situations when I was called upon, and I saw this in my sales style too, I like to tell stories. So I like to frame things in a story. And a lot of professors you'll find are trained this way. They'll start every one of their lectures with a story. And go from there. And I think that might be part of my extroversion as well that shows up in the academic sphere. And that's recently in the MBA, we talked about that specifically of when you're doing a formal presentation, to start, you know, with a story and kind of have a hook into that. So thank you for that. I think we batted 1,000 that one. I was pretty sure that was kind of how that was going to turn out and turn up. Is there too much extroversion push these days? Is there not enough introversion push? Should we, you know, I think about mindfulness and I think about meditation and I think about what that means in yoga and how that has become more important. Yet when I'm sitting in classes or I'm talking to students, they're bemoaning group work. And I was watching, preparing for this, reading and watching a TED Talk on introversion, and the introverted self-identifying speaker said, just, can we please stop the group work? Can we just stop the group work? So I want to go around. I want to hear your opinions kind of about group work and the professional academic space. And is it too much? And are we demanding too much extroversion from people and not teaching introversion?
I think that drawing from what I said at the last answer to the question, I learned a lot about myself because of the career path that I chose that forced me into situations that I otherwise would not have chosen to go into. And so with that as the context, I think that group work is very important in the sense that it does force particularly introverts into scenarios that they need to learn about themselves through. And the complete absence of group work, I would be concerned that it would be removing a vehicle that facilitates relationships with people that you may not understand. You may not even know if you like them or not. You're forced to learn styles. You're forced to learn how to hold a group accountable. There are so many things from a skill set standpoint that I don't know how you would fill that void elsewhere. So I would be a proponent of group work. And drawing from a previous conversation that we had outside of this podcast, but it has to be meaningful group work, not BS group work, but something that has a real sense of alignment and a real sense of value for the participants in the group, because then you can unify around something and there's a sense of momentum where then within the margins of all of that, you're learning about yourself.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with Phil. I don't think that extroversion is getting pushed too much, because even though I enjoy doing work by myself, it's not how life goes. You have to work with others, and that's super important. And so, I mean, I've had a fair deal of group projects, but it's been honestly a very equal balance of individual work and group work. And I think it's super important to make relationships, especially like in college when you're not, like in high school, you're doing group projects like with your friends. But in college, you're meeting strangers and then having to, you know, work around them and like kind of adjust yourself to their personality types and see what works best, which is exactly what would happen once I graduate and then go work someplace. I'm going to have to meet all these new people and learn how to work with them and all that. Like, it's a very important skill that I'm glad I definitely have developed more since I got to college, with becoming more willing to work with people and doing better at working with people. And yeah, so I definitely, it's super important, and I don't think it's getting pushed too much, because they're really helping people be prepared for the real world.
Yeah, I definitely agree with it helping prepare people for the real world. Like, in all of your jobs, you're going to be working with lots of people. And obviously, we've all had group projects in classes. And sometimes you'll have a group project where it's not going good and someone doesn't hold up their end of the stick. And it teaches you how to navigate through those situations and how to have those awkward conversations of, hey, dude, like, you're not holding, like, you're part of the bargain up, I guess. And like, we really need this, like, our final grade relies on this, and like, I don't understand why you're not doing it. And it's been awkward when you have to, like, sometimes get professors involved, or like, just be like, okay, well, I guess I'm doing it, and then I'm gonna have to, like, make a note that you didn't do anything. And that will happen in your future too, like, in your careers, like, you're gonna have to have those awkward conversations. And I think that's been what's been most beneficial to me about group project, is like, navigating the awkwardness, or like, the bad parts of group projects. Because I mean, you can get a project done and be like, okay, well, that was easy, but you don't really learn much from it, other than like, okay, like, we all did our part and it was good. But when something goes wrong, like, that's when you learn, and that's how, like, you're like, okay, now I know how to deal with that in the future. And that's what I've liked about them.
Yeah, I think group work is not going away. I wonder if we don't spend any time, and I think it's, I've been very well traveled. I've been very fortunate, and definitely education systems in the West, I think we spend a lot of time on this, and we spend time on case study and organizational behavior. When I've traveled to other places, I notice, especially in primary schools, people learn to spend time with themselves, learn those concentration skills, and they learn that, and then they integrate later on. And then I think about myself personally, and I think COVID did a big piece of it, and then grad school probably finished me off, where I noticed I had introversion tendencies that I ignored that were actually very beneficial to take that time to reflect. And I'm going to take something out of Phil's book, and I have blocked time literally with nothing in there, and I'll be an extrovert and I'll tell my quick story. But there's a famous parable about a farmer who runs a dairy farm, and he calls up a high-powered business consultant and says, you know, I want to make my business better, and I hear consulting is the latest, greatest thing, so why don't you come out and consult? So he pays a consultant $10,000, and the consultant comes out, spends a week, and at the end of the week, the consultant comes to present his case, and he sets up a great big PowerPoint machine inside the milking parlor after morning milking, and he puts a slide up there, and he says, this is a picture of your cows being milked, and you do this many pounds of milk, and this is what it sells for. And he goes, I figured out how you can triple your output. Farmer's like, I'm listening. He says, you need to do more milking. He's like, well, what do you mean? He says, well, look at this. Pulls up the next slide. There's a cow laying in a pasture chewing its cud. He says, these cows, they lay around for 12 hours a day. And then you bring them in here and milk. If you just milk them more, you make more money. Well, of course, you know where this story is going, and the consultant gets fired. The cow sitting, laying down, chewing its cud is how it makes milk, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't spend a ton of time, I guess, chewing my own cud, thinking about my own thoughts and putting that together. And as you rise up in the ranks of any organization, if you want more responsibility, you have to find time for it. And if I'm pulled down, and Phil and I talk about this all the time, and Phil coaches me on this, if I get pulled down into the tactical things, I feel like I'm busy because I'm doing something, but I'm not being efficient by not delegating out the tasks, using the resources and the people that are helping me, because I want to do the work, because it feels good to do the work and accomplish things. And I think that's my takeaway as we went through this process. So I want to go around one more time, and I want to kind of wrap with your thoughts on introversion and extroversion as people create these mentorships. So we're in the week of pairing right now, so people are going to be getting together very soon. What have you taken away from this conversation, or thoughts on it, that you think might apply to mentoring?
My mentality is kind of parallel to the analogy that if you rolled into a doctor's office looking for a solution, and the doctor was prescribing medication and prescribing solutions before even asking you about your symptoms, asking you about your life, your lifestyle, things that may be very important pieces of data, is my worst fear for a mentoring relationship, where you're not, as the pro-mentor, you're showing up thinking that you have all of the answers, and you also know the answers that are being sought, and you may not know. And so we often reflect on, for me, when I was in college, just the very basic need of having somebody available to help you with uncertainty, to help you with embarrassing questions, to help you navigate how to approach certain conversations, or if that is not appealing, to facilitate connections based on what your career desires may be. Every single opportunity has a person attached to it, if you think about it. So you're a conduit of your own personal knowledge and the network of knowledge that exists around you as a pro mentor. And I think engaging with that in mind is really the point of why it felt important to talk about these dynamics, because if it's about a knowledge transfer, that's what the whole thought around mentorship is, knowledge and experience transfer. Just make sure you know your audience and what they're seeking and desiring, rather than telling everybody to get a business card, for example. I mean, that wouldn't have been my style, and we talk really honestly about that with each other, and I love that we can have conversations like that, but that's the reality, is there's different approaches that work for different people, and you got to be inquisitive if you're really going to meet the need that's being sought. And it's impossible to define, you would be writing textbooks of information on how to navigate the human being nuances around this, when the simple answer is just to ask the question. It removes a lot of burden from you administering the program to just make sure that mindset is set appropriately and is positioned for success, which is meaningful growth and meaningful connections, meaningful opportunity as a result of time spent.
Yeah, I think no matter what personality type you are, anybody can get along just fine and build a relationship. And so I think it's super important that in mentorship, that you build a strong relationship with somebody and you understand each other and you know that you understand each other, because that's so important. And just to be able to work together and be able to figure things out. And I also think with mentorship, it helps a lot, because maybe if you're I'm an introvert paired with an extrovert, it really helps me push to do things that are out of my comfort zone, and vice versa. Like, then maybe extroverts can be like, oh, maybe I should take a break and, you know, kind of spend time by myself. Maybe that's a good idea, or just spend time with my mentor instead of like in a big group of people. It definitely, no matter what personality type you are, I think each, like, even if it's like introvert, introvert, extrovert, extrovert, or like introvert, extrovert, you all can learn something different from each other and still build on those relationships and help each other push and do better with building relationships.
That was very well said of both of you, and you took a lot of my ideas. But I think just having like that initial conversation and asking the questions of like, okay, like, how do you go about like your normal, semester, if we're talking about like mentoring students, and being able to navigate like and learn from each other and being able to ask questions to each other, like, how do you do in this situation? Like, this is how I would do it, but like, how would you? And just learning from each other and knowing that like both the mentee and mentor can learn from each other and take things away and be like, okay, yeah, maybe I should implement that into my life. And but also giving advice too of how to step out of your comfort zone, because that's where you really learn, is out of your comfort zone. So
I heard you say relationships first, and I completely agree with that. No mentoring happens, especially what I would call deep mentoring, or the really exciting part of mentoring, is until a relationship established. So too bad Challenger Sales book, relationships win in this kind of situation. Being vulnerable, I think, and being open with, you know, how you're feeling, what you're feeling. And for me, it's sometimes saying, I don't know. So I think part of what Phil was talking about earlier, when you come as the mentor, and we say this in the handbook or saying it on the podcast, I say it in trainings, you're not supposed to have all the answers. And if you do, you might be going about it incorrectly. And the most interesting mentoring relationships. And if you go back and listen to our last episode where we had the round table, you'll hear that from our pro mentors that got as much out of it or got recharged for that. And that's why I always tell pro mentors, you're like, I don't have time. If you don't have time, you need to mentor because you need that recharge. Continuous communication, I heard you talk about. I think that's so important in any relationship and having that time, whether Elena talked about, you know, calling somebody to the table that's not holding up their end of the bargain, or recognizing something in your partner that's saying, you know, hey, are you okay with that? Or this is the way I'm thinking, or what are you feeling? Or you try to read the room, as Phil said. I think that's so important. And that final piece that I'll reiterate is being open to learning from each other. And that's what's important, but that's also, I think, what makes mentorship so exciting. If you go back for millennia, human beings as a tribe, we've been kind of together. This is how we best evolve to succeed to where we are, is when we work together and not apart, and figuring out how to do that. So I really appreciate the conversation today that we've had. I learned a lot about this as we continue to go forward with the mentorship program, and hopefully you folks listening out there have got some ideas for your next piece of conversation with anybody, because mentorship spans, of course, outside of this. It's a human activity. It's not just a, you know, sometime activity. So I appreciate everybody coming out for the podcast, and thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for sailing along on this episode of the Seedman Mentorship Podcast. For more information on the Seedman School of Business Mentorship Program at Grand Valley State University, set your heading to www.gvsu.edu/Seedman. If you have a story to tell, know someone we should interview, have questions or comments, email us at gvbiz@gvsu.edu. Until next time, keep a weathered eye on the horizon, and we wish you fair winds. So long.